North-South Connection podcast listeners, Chad Campbell back here again with another edition of the Fighting Spirit of 06. Been a while since I've been watching 2006 footage with my vacation in the last couple of weeks. So it was good to dive back in. As per usual, we get a pretty interesting mixture of good and bad stuff that we'll talk about tonight. A little programming note, a little 2020 real world problem, minor real world problem, first world problem, that reflects 2006 footage. So I have all of the DVDs for Ring of Honor from 2004 through 2008. I think once Tyler Black won the title is the last DVD I ever bought for the promotion. So I have all those in my trusty DVD case. I pulled out Tag Wars 2006 from Dayton, which I was going to talk about on the show here tonight. And the DVD would not play at all. And tried to see if it was on Honor Club, and it was not, or chopped up. And so, therefore, I'm having to send off to get a replacement DVD because, you know, I've got to have a complete collection for some reason. So I sent off to get a replacement DVD for this random 2006 Ring of Honor show. I haven't actually ordered a wrestling DVD that's going to be coming in the mail in quite some time now. So it was quite a little bit of nostalgia there. But anyway, because of that, this edition of Fighting Spirit of 06, we are just going to be reviewing Raw, SmackDown, and Impact. And then on the next edition, we'll review two Ring of Honor shows, Tag Wars 2006 and Dissension, and then also the Royal Rumble. So let's dive into Raw, which is quite a enigma. I cannot figure out Raw so far in 2006, as we've had some good shows last week. 2 weeks ago was terrible. The first show of the year was okay. And as we talk about here tonight, it's probably more bad than good. We're back on the negative side of things. So the show starts off with an Edge movie style trailer. We hear that the rated R superstar will be taken to the Edge. Haha, you get it. But some good hype here showing him cashing in and the TLC match from last week, giving him a victory. Edge and Lita then come out. King is excited for that and says maybe finally we will get to see some live sex on Raw. Edge says he's not going to be a transitional champ like the Iron Sheik or Mick Foley, guys that won it, lost it, and never were heard from again. So I thought that was a good bit of foreshadowing putting in Foley's name there. As you can tell, that's a nice little nugget that will eventually lead to their feud and their match at Mania. So that was a good job there, just kind of slipping that in. He also says he's not going to lose it 16 times like Ric Flair. He's not a walking joke like Flair. And by the way, Flair's not exactly walking right now. We won't Flair chants fire up because they're in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ed says Flair will not be at the arena tonight because of the damage he did last week. And then he says that after tonight, John Cena will be joining him. After he cashes in his rematch clause and loses, his career is going into the toilet. Fans will have to find another overrated, untalented piece of crap like each and every one of you. Him, and Lena will go back to the house with the mirrors on the ceiling and the spinning hydraulic bed and have a huge celebration. This is a fine promo by Edge. Nothing revolutionary, but served his purpose. John Cena interrupts. Cena tells Edge that he has a hoe. They go on vacation to Lake Tahoe. They eat taters from Idaho. Her lineage is traced back to the Navajo. He says their live sex was more disgusting than Mae Young and the Boogeyman. The boy goes to Miami and will receive the worst ass kicking of his life. He loses the WWE title and main event spot and also loses his hoe. Turns out she fell in love with Jim Duggan. So not Cena's best work here. All that this kind of blood feud they've been building leading up to him calling Lita a hoe again and a Jim Duggan joke. It didn't really resonate or fit, so that was pretty lame. He also says the boy will go from being rated R to rating G for gone, like the WWE title, G for gonorrhea, which is present, the hoe leaves behind, and then King on commentary saying, I gotta see this movie. So Lita, after all that accusatory nature, has something to say. She doesn't know who the hoe John is referring to, but Edge won't have a hard time finding a partner tonight. John, she hears, is having trouble finding someone to play with, and he might have to go play with himself. Cena says that's good, because to see something of substance come out of her mouth instead of in. And then John cuts the jokes and says tonight is a preview of the Rumble. We will get gritty, although right now he's standing next to a bitch, and Sunday Cena will make him his bitch. So really an all over the place promo here for this kind of being your final back and forth exchange between these two. It was a little disorganized for my liking. They switched too much between whether the heat is on Lita, whether it was the jokey nature of Cena, or whether it was serious. It was just a little bit convoluted for me. It didn't resonate at all. And this was a feud I liked for the most part up to this point, but they kind of lost me here, and I think they lost the narrative. We come back from break. We get the big Carlito versus Kane singles match that was developed from that nothing angle of the Carlito's cabana last week. Kane has the early advantage. Crowd is just dead as shit for these two. A nice middle rope missile drop kick by Carlito. Carlito pounds on Kane for a bit. He looks for the tornado DDT, but is shrugged off by Kane. Clothesline and big boot from Kane. That gets followed up with his leg drop. Top rope clothesline by Kane, but Carlito is able to hit the backstabber when Kane goes for the tombstone. Springboard somersault senton gets another two from Carlito. Carlito dives off the middle rope into chokeslam position, but Carlito is able to poke the eyes to thwart that off. Carlito then grabs a chair. Kane gets his boot up, but the momentum sends Carlito off the ropes, and he hits Kane with the chair. That looked very lame, convoluted. That gets the DQ. Kane sits up and Carlito Bell. So again, just a weird feud, and one that's not very entertaining. And I know what the tag title match is at WrestleMania, so I don't know if these two are going to be entrenched from now to up to that point, but hopefully they make things a little more interesting, because right now it just feels very maligned and kind of thrown together. Just these two just randomly come to fighting it out, starting three quarters for the match. We see Lita getting sent into Big Show's dressing room for some persuasion. Edge tells her it's nothing that soap can't clean up later. A bunch of Carolina Panthers are in the house. Coach makes fun of them, saying they don't have practice tomorrow. And then we go to the back, where Lita is massaging and caressing Big Show. Show says he's not feeling it. Lita says he should sit back, relax, and loosen up. Show asks if she wants to go to seventh heaven with a seven-footer. Lita takes off her shirt, and then Edge comes barging in. Show gets awkward at that, and Edge says Lita will finish him off after he teams with Edge tonight. Show gets up and tells him hell no. Show says he wants to go to the Rumble and fight for the championship like a man. Pimps up, hoes down. So again, just a weird, the way Lita's being portrayed is just no one's found the kind of right tone to play off of her. And so this was another backstage segment that didn't work for me. Trish is stretching and gets joined by Mickey. Mickey asks if it's true if she's teaming with Ashley instead of her. Mickey asks if she likes Ashley more than herself. Everything that Mickey does is for Trish. Mickey says she wanted Trish. She watched Trish with her granddaddy growing up. Mickey is crying hysterically until Trish stops her. Mickey says Trish can do what she wants. She'll just have to accept that. So there we go. Coach has a big Ben Roethlisberger jersey on, and that we're going to have a big announcement about the Rumble Sunday. He has found out who the number 30 spot will go to. This man is nasty and dangerous and confident. That man is me, the GOAT. King interrupts this, gets on the table and calls him a skinhead, says you can already see, you can already know where this is going because you can see King's gear under his coat when he stands up. Lawler then asks who he ever beat. Lawler pulls the crowd, who should get the number 30 spot, either him or Coach. Of course, the crowd wants King to get it, and they end up setting up a match for later. Pretty lame, not leading anywhere, another wasted angle. Victoria and Candace versus Ashley and Trish. Another atrocious match between the Divas. Rough month for the Divas besides the Mickey versus Trish singles match at New Year's Revolution. Springboard into axe handle by Ashley and then a La Magistral that looked awful for two. And then Victoria and Trish are in now. Trish hits a top rope run and leg drop. King tells Candace that he can... that she can wave his wand. King says something is coming up. Just the dirt worst horny commentary from King. This has been a very horny show between the derogatory comments towards Lita and now King's misogynist commentary. And that's something that, you know, I even putting on 2006 goggles on this show overall, it's just been way too ham-fisted into the viewer and overwrought throughout the program so far. Ashley trips as she tries to springboard. That looks awful. Candace was tripping her up anyway, but the timing was off on that. Cartwheel body scissors into splash double team by Candace. King is just gobsmacked that Coach is looking at Ashley's face on the apron. Victoria misses the springboard somersault leg drop. Trish then gets the hot tag. Nice chop by Trish and a drop kick. Trish dispatches of Candace to the outside and Ashley hits a splash on Victoria for the pin. And then Mickey attacks right after the bell again like she did last week. Trish restrains her, but Mickey hits a back kick that connects. And that sets up the angle for later. Half a star. Again, these Divas matches are really bad. Just bad, bad stuff right now. Shelton's mom's backstage. Shelton is mad that HBK called him a mama's boy. Shelton's mom says, well, she's here now, and they will go get some mama's pie before the match. We get a video of Billy Graham's DVD that was coming out. That is shown. And then Billy Graham is shown into the crowd, and he looks good. He looked good at this point in time in 2006, so good for him. That sets up kind of our feature match for the night, which is Shelton Benjamin versus Shawn Michaels. They, of course, had the great match the year previously. I haven't watched that in a while, but at this point in time, this show really needed something to kind of inject it in the veins. And the show was really poor up to this point. So I was optimistic when they came out. Vince also comes out beforehand and says if Shawn loses the match tonight, then he won't be in the Royal Rumble. So we get that stipulation before. Some good chain wrestling to start. Shelton gets sent to the outside, hits a nasty chop. Mama's yapping the whole time for him. Good callback with Shelton doing the springboard as of last year. But this year, last year he got hit with the Sweet Chin Music off of that. This year he catches the Sweet Chin Music attempt. So a good callback to the previous match. He sends Shawn to the outside as we go to a commercial break. Shawn's posted himself and Shawn is pounding away with aggression and punches that I like to see for his comeback. Shelton locks in a chin lock and an HBK chant fires up. He's being sympathetic here for the crowd. A nice Samoan drop by Shelton as Shawn tries to fight out of that. Another mini comeback by Shawn. And he looks poised that he's going to hit the elbow from the top, but then Shelton gets up, hits a step-up enziguri that sends Shawn to the outside before another break. That was just an amazing spot. Shelton timed it perfectly. It seemed like, you know, Shawn just wasn't standing there watching someone hit the move for him because Shelton used his quickness so well. Just all around a great spot. Back from the break, Sean is able to hit a swinging net breaker. Sean nips up, runs through his comeback while sewing his back on every offensive move. But then again, Sheldon is able to thwart his attempt for the spin and then hits his spinning back kick. He goes for another middle rope dive, but Sean catches him with the clothesline. Sean gets the elbow drop. He starts shaking the ropes and hulking up like the Warrior. Shelton mom goes up to distract Sean, but it actually gets the referee's attention, and Sean is able to reverse and pin Shelton with a handful of tights. So a lame finish and some Sean annoyances, but a really good match and certainly way better than anything else on the show so far. So easy 3.5-star match for me. You know, very good TV match. You know, maybe not the classic that the year before gets presented as. Again, I haven't seen it in a while, so I can't really judge for myself. But, you know, this was certainly a very good TV match and miles better than anything we've seen on this show so far. Next, we get Edge trying to get Triple H to be his partner. Triple H says he will think about it. But Triple H does it in his weird, demeaning tone that really pissed me off, because it makes Triple H look minor league. It makes Edge look minor league and looks beneath Triple H. So I hated this, actually. Now it's time for our weekly Sean and Vince sat down. Sean tells him to do what he's got to do. Vince says that's what he's doing. He is going to do what makes him happy. He's spending some of the money he's accumulated through the years. He says he has more money than God. He intends to spending it on himself and having a good time. Vince is going to turn the business back 20-30 years, back when the business was all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Vince is going back to the all-night parties and not giving a damn about anyone or anything. And he wants Sean to resort back to his pill-popping, brash man he used to be. So the enabler Vince here. Sean says no, never. Vince is disappointed and says his luck will run out at the Royal Rumble. He guarantees it. So there we go. More development there. Coach versus King. Brutal wrestling for 1 minute. Then we get the debut of the Spirit Squad. No reaction at all for them. King has the armbar, but is distracted by the Spirit Squad. Punched by King. The Spirit Squad, I think it's Mikey, says 5, 6, 7, 8. When Coach rocks the house, he rocks it all the way down. They blow air horns, and then Coach gets a schoolboy to roll up King and win just a shit debut for Spirit Squad. They looked awful. The match was terrible. 4th of a star, and that may be generous. This probably deserved a dud. Coach is gloating, saying he has no idea who those guys were. Just they looked terrible in their debut. It's a gimmick I don't remember fondly, especially when we get to the DX stuff. So I'm not looking forward to this one overall. Next is kind of another nothing little segment, which is the over the top rope second chance Rumble. Gregory Hounds is back with the jobber entrance. So after he got beat by King at the pay-per-view, that's where he stands now. Big Show comes out last. Just a nothing match. Conway, Kate, and Hounds team up for a bit. Show beats them easily. And, you know, he's in the Royal Rumble. Yippee. Triple H comes out for his promo then. It was against Show, but ends up leading to him setting himself up for Mania. So, again, more burial and just Not great stuff. Not great stuff now. They're kind of limping into the Royal Rumble here on the Raw side. Edge is worried backstage that he doesn't have a partner. Lita just wants to have a quickie. Edge's partner walks in and he says now everyone is going to be satisfied. That leads us to the main event mystery partner tag match, which is Edge and his mystery partner Chris Masters. Yay. Versus John Cena, and of course his mystery partner is Ric Flair. So they feign a big shot, but it wasn't really that shocking. It's a cool moment, but I'm a little conflicted because, I mean, Flair did have this brutal match the week before. He's 60 plus years old at this time having that type of match, so it probably wouldn't have hurt him to sell the damage from last week a little bit instead of just getting this hometown hero's welcome a week later with no bandages or no, you know, ill effects from the TLC match. King says every time you count out Flair, he comes right back. Cena and Masters pound away as we want Flair chance fire up. Cena hits a suplex, tags in Flair. He starts gyrating at Lita. Flair's a house of fire, chopping and pounding away at both until Masters able to hit the power slam. Edge on the outside gets a cheap shot in. Crowd is chanting on Cena as Masters Edge continue to work over Flair. Another good power slam by Masters gets two. Cena is given the hot tag, and he clears house. Masters goes for the master lock, but Flair clips his leg. FU by Cena, and the STU-FU to Chris Masters, and he taps. I wasn't too enthusiastic about Chris Masters tapping here. I don't really know. They were kind of booked into a corner, or you could have just had Flair job again. That may have been the best choice, actually. Basic match. Just disappointing overall. I mean, just a disappointing Raw overall. I mean, I gave 2.5 for this match. So, you know, you had one very good match. You had one decent match in the main event, which was fine. It's just Masters jobbing was annoying. So the in-ring action was either atrocious that you saw with King and Coach and the Divas, or, you know, serviceable to very good with Shelton versus Shawn Michaels. So given a very good match, a 3.5-star match, it's tough for me to write this Raw completely off. But that really saves it, because just recapping it and going through how frustrating most of the angles were and how the wrong choices, I think, were made in almost all of the segments here tonight, it really shows how a very good match can kind of cloud your judgment, because I didn't think when I finished watching this Raw that it was great by any means or even good, but really without that 3.5-star match, it may have been worse than the one 2 weeks before. I thought this was a really rotten Raw that was kind of saved by one very good match that's probably worth going out of your way to see. Otherwise, they struggled, definitely, going into the Rumble. So now let's see how SmackDown responds and see how they are going into the Rumble. We get a recap of the Angle versus Mark Henry feud to start off the show. They're in Greenville, South Carolina. We also learned tonight, last week, some more hype for the No Holds Barred match between Benoit and Orton. Ray then makes his entrance. We see a Royal Rumble press conference. Ray's dedicating the Rumble to Eddie. And there we go. Ray versus Mark Henry, rematch from last week in their great match. Ray attacks right away before Henry can even get in the ring. He knocks Henry off the apron, but not off his feet. Ray starts drop kicking the knees, but then runs into a nasty clothesline. Daivari is on commentary, not adding much insight. I think Daivari was certainly lost in the shuffle. Him in the Angle role wasn't great, but was at least serviceable. But once Angle turned on him and now he's with Mark Henry, it's just not working at all. Doesn't seem to fit much at all. Ray goes for a tornado DDT. Henry slams him down again. Ray is set on the top rope and gets knocked off with a big right hand. Huge power slam from Mark Henry. He just dumps Ray onto the mat. Ray escapes to the outside. Henry's stalking and laughing at him. It looks like Ray's hiding behind the stairs, but when Henry kicks the stairs over, we don't see Ray there. We realize Ray crawled under the ring. He's able to sneak behind Henry. He uses his speed to keep Mark Henry reeling. He crotches Mark Henry coming back into the ring. That puts Henry down on the mat. Ray hits his drop kick and moonsault for a 1.5 count. Henry is able to try another power slam, but he gets stun gunned over the top rope. He stumbles into 619 position. Ray hits that. His Rana, though, is caught by Henry, and the power slam gets 3. So another fun match in this feud. 3.25 stars, 6.5 out of 10. It wasn't certainly as good as last week. A little more awkwardness, I think, from Henry, especially like his stumbling into the 619 position didn't look natural at all this week, whereas last week it actually looked pretty good and organic. So, but, you know, a good feud. I mean, it's setting up Henry well, and this is the theme of 2006 WWE. I mean, I think you're going to see across the board good wrestling, bad booking. So they knew at this point what Ray was going to win the Royal Rumble, I would assume. So having him lose to Henry the 2 days before that, maybe not the best idea. I'll just say that. Not the worst. I'm not saying that's an egregious choice. We'll get to that when Ray wins the title. But, yeah, probably not the best either. We hear a quick interview with Matt Hardy just talking about the Rumble. He says he's not the odds-on favorite, but he doesn't doubt himself. Most don't expect him to main event Mania, but that's cool by him. No one is more driven than him when it comes to do-or-die situations. Matt Hardy dies, so there you go. Randy's backstage. He meets up with Booker T. Randy tells Booker he doesn't need his help tonight. He'll go at it alone. And then we hear Booker's going to be in the Rumble Sunday. So that's good that he looks like he's going back in action. And then Randy says he may cash in on that favor soon while pointing to the United States Championship belt. Charmel is not amused by that. Clips from the SmackDown tour in Mexico. This was fine. Ray made his return with a beautiful Aztec headdress. El Hijo del Santo shown in the crowd. He gets in the ring and raises Rey Mysterio and Benoit's hands at the end. Teddy Long says it was a great event, and they show the attendance in Mexico City in DFA. And all that was well and good, except for racist JBL. And listen, I know he's a heel, but we had a horrible just short clip it where he's with a patron outside who has a painting, and we hear JBL say that he'll give $20 for the painting, but he also needs a gardener. I mean, just something completely unnecessary. Didn't really need to be in this video package. I mean, if you're celebrating the tour of Mexico City and the heritage showing Santo and Rey Mysterio's Aztec headdress gear, then why put that in? Why even involve the heels? It was worthless. It was just a racist line that just somehow needed to be inserted in their eyes. And I don't know. It was just a very short clip, but kind of shows their mentality of, you know, if we're representing a culture, we also got to get this, you know, we're going to throw in this racist comment by the heel. Certainly didn't seem in good taste nowadays, and again, I don't think in 2006 eyes it would have been well positioned too. Then we get another just nothing match. It's Super Crazy and Psychosis versus Vito and Nunzio versus the Dicks. This is for the final two spots in the Rumble on the SmackDown side. The match starts in progress after we come back from commercial break. Very disjointed. Too many bodies in the match. Nunzio and Vito get a double clothesline and actually got some cheers from the crowd randomly. Psychosis is worked over. Is facing peril for a bit. Vito has a camel clutch on him. Super Crazy gets tagged in. Hits his back kick, drop kick, and bulldog on the Italian squad. The Dicks come in, and then it's just mayhem. All six guys in. A weak spinning back kick by Psychosis clears Vito out of the ring, and then the Mexicools hit a double team move and win. So another match here, star and a half, and just nothing going on. Quick Benoit flashback to him winning the 2004 Rumble, and now it's time for our no holds barred match, which is Chris Benoit versus Randy Orton. Some very strong mat work to start. Benoit goes for the German. Orton bails as we head to break. Orton locks on a headlock after break, and they're really working it well. This was some great mat work. Everything was tight. You could see the strategy that both men were having in their escapes and trying to transition. Just really well done, classical mat work. And Orton holds his own. I know the Benoit angle series is one that I enjoy, but you know, you do have to sort of have a mind lapse in mentality that Benoit is going toe-to-toe with an Olympic wrestler on the mat, and they really work more on sit-outs and fast escapes and speed, whereas I think here you could see more a thinking man strategy, and again, just stuff that looked stiff and uncomfortable and tightly worked. More, I would say, World of Sport style. Just very gritty, the mat work here. Benoit tries to isolate the arm. Randy breaks it up, knowing that the crossface is what he was trying to lead into. Benoit keeps going after that arm. A nasty chop from Benoit gets big O from the crowd. Randy has a couple of real strong right-hand punches and then has an uppercut, sending Benoit to the outside. Orton sends him headfirst into the table, then comes back with another tight headlock inside the ring. Benoit breaks that, but Orton nails him with a drop kick that was right on the money, just flush right on the chin. Looked amazing. Randy then retrieves a trash can lid, hammers Benoit in the back with it. Randy goes for another shot, but Benoit drop toe holds Orton into the trash can lid. Orton is then sent into the steps. Orton is sent into the tables, a revenge spot from a minute before. Randy's able to rake the eyes and then press slam Benoit onto the table, and then gets a two count out on the outside of the ring. A chair is brought in, but Benoit blocks that, goes for the sharpshooter. Some good struggle, showing Orton fight not to get that locked in as well. So he's done very good, Orton, underneath fighting to not get locked in the crossface and the sharpshooter, protecting those submissions. Orton then goes back on offense with a knee to the sternum. They continue to trade shot and go fighting towards the entrance way. Benoit sends Orton back into the ring, then hits a double forearms for a two count. Three amigos from Benoit. Both are on the top rope, but Benoit is able to hit some headbutts and then a superplex. Benoit again tries for the crossface. Orton blocks that by sending both to the outside. Orton then paced Benoit with a trash can shot right to the head as we go to another break. Randy is in control as we head back from break for the finale. He exposes the concrete floor on the outside, but Randy gets back body dropped. I thought this was a good job by Cole on commentary, mentioning that the pile driver is currently outlawed in WWE, but with it being a no-holds-barred match, you know, all bets were off and Randy could utilize that move. Benoit now has the chair, but he slams it towards Randy's head, who moves out of the way in the ring. Randy retreats, but he's caught with some rolling German suplexes. Benoit goes for the diving headbutt, but Randy's able to grab the trash can lid. Benoit smacks right into that nasty spot. Tough to see, knowing Benoit's mental condition probably at this time, and certainly a year later, but it was a spot that did look great in the confines of this match. Randy goes for an RKO. That gets blocked with a trash can lid shot from Benoit, and then he's able to lock in the crossface, which he'd been looking for throughout the match, some submission. Orton's in the middle of the ring and is forced to tap out. So great match, logical. Thought the weapon shots were utilized well. Probably the final diving headbutt trash can lid shot was certainly not needed, but this is where one of those times where it's tough, and I can see it's kind of like the Benoit Jericho ladder match at Royal Rumble 2001, where Benoit goes for the diving tope to the outside and gets smacked in the head and then runs right into the railing. If you can just think about it within the confines of the match, it worked, it was logical, but I certainly understand if you can't, you know, separate the aesthetic performance versus the real life trauma it was certainly causing on Benoit's brain. But as for me, I can, I did really enjoy this match. It's up there with the TLC as the best TV match we've seen, and really a great match overall. And I think this feud, as I've talked about, doesn't get enough praise. This is the last singles match Benoit and Orton would ever have. They're in kind of a weird six-man in February that we'll watch on SmackDown, and then they're in the 2006-2007 Royal Rumble. I don't know if they have any interaction with those. I'll be on the lookout. But those are the only three matches, period, that these two are ever in for the rest of Benoit's life. So it's kind of a feud that, you know, the 2004 stuff, I think the SummerSlam match is underrated. The match the night after Raw is a great match. And then this series that we've seen, they've had some very good to great matches, and this was probably my favorite of the all. So I went 4.25, 8.4. And, you know, this is the type of match that during the greatest WWE match ever project, this wouldn't have made my list. But would have not been that far off. I mean, I thought this was a great, great match. One worth watching if, again, you can separate that when dealing with Benoit. Road Warrior Animal is also ready for the Rumble. He talks about winning barbed wire, scaffold, and cage matches. But the Rumble has eluded him. He will then go to his hometown in Chicago and bring the gold home. So, you know, I'll give credit to Animal for somebody that has jack shit chance of actually winning the Royal Rumble. He created quite a narrative in his mind of the hometown boy, you know, challenging for the championship in Chicago. Then we get a interesting match on paper of Finley versus Funaki. Finley's such a great breath of fresh air. He is just a brutal bastard in these matches. He smothers Funaki right away, a killer clothesline, butt drop right to the sternum of Funaki. Finley yells that Funaki sucks. Funaki's able to get a boot in, but then gets a big forearm from Finley, a straight knee right to the face. Stiff clothesline. He starts going after the arms. Some really nasty finger work and joint manipulation by Finley. But Funaki shows some fire. He fires back. Finley grabs the hair to maintain control, stomps on the hand. But a nice enziguri from Funaki and a roll-up gets two. An inverted atomic drop by Funaki. He's building some momentum. He actually gives a nasty right-hand slap to Finley because he's tired of being beat down by Finley. But he climbs up the second rope. Finley throws him off of that and then hits the Celtic Cross quickly for the win. Afterwards, Finley beats him down some more. The referee ends up reversing his decision, says Funaki wins by DQ. Finley gets on the mic and says he's sick of the yellow-bellied, soft-skinned Americans. He is not here to get along and fit in. This is what he does. He fights. Get over your anxieties and ailments because he's not going away. This is just the beginning and he will not stop. So a great promo by Finley. 3 stars for the match. A lot of fun. It was certainly a beatdown by Finley, but just his stiffness and believability and everything he's bringing to the table, like I said, it's just a welcome. And he's been great. 2 weeks in, all aboard. So we go from that. We had an absolutely fantastic match with Orton and Benoit. We had a really fun squashy type match with Funaki and Finley and more development from Finley. So we're really riding high on the momentum. And then we get, I don't know, this may be the, I mean, there's some bad angles going on in WWE right now. Spirit Squad, Coach, and King, the Divas in-ring action, Kane and Carlito is a nothing feud. But Jillian, JBL, and Boogeyman is probably the absolute pit worst. So backstage we have Jillian and JBL. JBL says the Boogeyman's afraid of him. He mentioned Jillian's face. She says it's not the physical pain, but the mental anguish. She can feel him licking her face and biting it, which is just gross to think about. Jillian asked if JBL had noticed she did have a small beauty mark on her face. And JBL was like, oh, yeah, I never noticed that. And she said, yeah, well, now that's gone because he ate it. So just, I mean, lame-ass angle here between these two. Right before JBL's match, Bobby Lashley gives his Rumble hype promo, says he'll go to the Rumble and remain undefeated. Very wooden by Bobby here. Love you, Bobby, but very wooden promo here. It's JBL versus Scotty Too Hotty. Scotty Too Hotty in 2006 is quite a scene as he's still in his too cool gear, trying to be the cool dad, and it's just not working. So JBL and Jillian check for Boogeyman under the ring. Pretty much a squash. Scotty gets a little bit of an offense in. He goes for the worm and then gets hit with the clothesline from hell. As soon as JBL hits the clothesline from hell, the ring starts smoking. Boogeyman's music starts blaring. JBL's looking around paranoid. And then worms, live worms, a ton of them drop from the sky onto the mat. Boogeyman then emerges. Boogeyman smashes the clock over his head. JBL is traumatized by that and starts slipping and sliding in the worm. So, shit angle. I hate this angle. Half a star for the match was nothing, and the angle just needs to go away. I definitely needs to go away. Just awful stuff. Teddy is visited by Melina. Melina says she is here for a little business and it is something she wants to show Teddy some persuasion here as Melina hikes her leg up, starts taking off her boot, rubbing her leg. But then we see Melina has a taped up, swollen ankle. Melina gets mad, said this is all of Kurt Angle's fault for putting her in the ankle lock the week before. Teddy didn't do anything when she was sexually harassed by Batista, and she didn't do anything now with Angle putting her in the ankle lock, so now he is officially on notice. Our final promo by Mark Henry before the world title match on Sunday. Pretty brief, nothing major. He's just saying Angle is looking at the future champion. And then we get the full Rumble card run down by Cole and Taz before our main event, which is a handicap match of Kurt Angle versus Eminem. I hate these handicap matches because they usually get the booking wrong, and this was no exception. Melina can't do her entrance with the hurt foot. Angle starts taking turns working over both members and Eminem. After 2 minutes, Angle gets flustered and then goes straight to the uppercuts and back body drop. But the numbers game catches up to Angle. They start working over him. A good hope spot from Angle as he goes for a charge in the corner, but Nitro pulls Mercury out of the way. Angle goes shoulder first into the post, really hit it with a lot of momentum. Eminem set up for the snapshot, but Kurt's able to block that. A German suplex to Mercury to buy Kurt some time. Melina on the outside gives Mercury a roll of quarters. Melina then distracts the ref, and Mercury sneaks in and hits a nice punch that really should have been the pinfall, but that only gets a 2.5 count. Crowd starts chanting for Angle. Angle slam to Mercury, belly to belly to the outside for Nitro, and then Angle gets Mercury in the ankle lock and he taps. Very annoying for Angle just to beat the tag champs by himself in a handicap match. They even cheated and still couldn't win over him. So I don't think this helped Eminem at all. Bad booking. Decent match, 2.5 stars, some fun stuff in the match itself, but really dumb booking. Eminem had looked good. The cage match versus Batista and Rey was well done, but this was certainly a disappointing mess here. After the match, I did like this, the finale, as Mark Henry comes to attack, but he gets Angle slammed, and then he applies the ankle lock, and Henry's able to shrug it off, send Angle out of the ring. Kurt looks shocked at that. So that was a cool finish, at least, but I don't know why we couldn't have just done that, where, you know, Angle gets pinned, Henry comes down the ring looking for the kill, and then we could have had the same angle, and it had been fine. I mean, it had been fine. I don't think Angle losing to the tag champs, that should not be presented as something below a world champion to lose in a handicap match to the tag champs, even if the world champion has a partner and he loses a tag match, because you're in their specialty area. So it's just dumb all around. Overall, I mean, SmackDown was certainly a better show than Raw. You had just a fantastic match, which was better than any match on Raw. And then the Finlay versus Funaki match I thought was fun. Henry versus Rey was also a good match. And then the final main event was, again, fine in ring, but dumb booking. But there's still little twitches that couldn't make me call this a great show. I mean, even with a 4.25 star match, I'd probably rate this show 6.5 or 7 out of 10 at best, just because the boogeyman JBL angle is so bad and the booking at the main event was dumb. And then you also had the throwaway last chance in the Royal Rumble match. I mean, that was just nothing. So still a little bit up and down there, but, you know, a good SmackDown with at least some very good in-ring action. Our final show we'll talk about is TNA Impact. We get a recap from last week about Sting's disappearance. We once again learn Sting will be here this week. We hear that tonight on Impact it will also be Abyss versus Rhino. That sets us up for our first match, which is Jeff Jarrett in action on Impact, which we hadn't seen yet. Jarrett attacks Lethal before the bell. He's facing Jay Lethal, by the way. He attacks Lethal before the bell, dumps him hard shot into the guardrail by Jay Lethal. Jackie Gata walks down the entranceway. She yells at Jarrett. Gail Kim then gets in her face, but Jackie produces a tape recorder. Jeff Jarrett gets real concerned at that, says it's nothing at all, but Gail Kim takes the tape recorder, walks away from the ringside area. So, I mean, this is certainly soap opera-y. It's not something I really dig. But at least we got some sort of development with this whole Jackie Gata angle that's been just really grating and annoying, and you haven't known where it's leading at all the previous month, so we're at least getting the wheels turning somewhat. That distraction allows Lethal to get back on top for a bit. He gets a drop kick and a diving headbutt, but then Jarrett very quickly turns the tide on that. Hits the stroke that, when he hit the stroke, you could tell Lethal really tried to give him great air on that. It looked a lot more brutal than most strokes do. And that gives Jarrett the win, of course, a star for the match. It was a squash, basically. Christian then comes out and interrupts. He said he didn't come out with any jokes, but a promise for you silly little bitch. And on February 12th, at Against All Odds, it'll be Christian versus Jeff Jarrett. Christian promises he will fulfill his destiny and win the championship because that's how I roll. So we get the big main event for Against All Odds. It's going to be Christian versus Jeff Jarrett. I'm fine with that. Come back from break. It's another squash match. Team 3D versus Buck Quatermain and Kenny King. Complete squash for the Dudleys here. 3D to end it. Half a star. You know, nothing. Generic squash. Then Team 3D has their Tag Team of the Year plaque with them. Bubba Ray asks for the microphone after the match. He says they can't choose which team they want to face it Against All Odds, whether it's America's Most Wanted or Team Canada. The crowd starts chanting for both. Bubba says they'd like to, but Zabisco wouldn't give them that chance. Bubba's then going to leave the decision up to the fans. We hear that you can go to TNAWrestling.com and vote. Bubba says no matter who these people vote on, it'll be a very bad day for both of those teams. And then Devon follows that up with his testify. So, you know, not bad. But that's kind of what's going on in the tag division right now in TNA. X Division video package between Styles, Daniels, and Joe. Good stuff here where you again see all three sides from all three men. Worked well, and then Larry Zbysko says that Against All Odds, it'll be a three-way dance, kind of a rematch of their great match in 2005 that Meltzer gave 5 stars for, so that's exciting. I mean, that would have been exciting at the time to have that rematch announced. Shane is in the back with Generation Next. Aries said that they've got 2 victories. They're trying to convince Jerry Lynn of better positioning on the card. Jerry Lynn says, whoopity-doo. Jerry then says they're driving him nuts. Matt Bentley interrupts, offers some advice. He says they haven't been long enough to sweep the ring. And then Jerry Lynn tells Matt it is his lucky night because he gets to prove himself right now. Shelly tells Shane at the very end that he has a perfect face for radio. So there you go. Matt Bentley comes out to the ring. We find out his opponent is none other than Samoa Joe. Uh-oh, Matt. We see Dave Hebner looking on. So we finally got some development on the Jackie Gator front. So now Dave Hebner is our big mystery, our, you know, white polar bear in Lost mystery that we really need some development on, because it's not – I mean, Hebner's just not an interesting figure to begin with, and the whole mystery aspect, like, we've got no clues, no hints. It feels very nonsensical, and it's not very exciting to keep cutting away to someone literally just watching the same match we are. Bentley gets mauled in the early going. He does get one boot up and goes for the drop kick, but Joe casually moves out of the way as he flies off the middle ropes. Sent on by Joe, and he's just stalking Bentley. Just great character work by Joe here. You can definitely see he's like a predator, really going after his prey inside the match with his positioning. Generation Next and Jerry Lynn are also both out watching. Bentley is able to get a bulldog and a couple of clotheslines. Rana takes Joe over and gets a 2 count. Joe comes back. He tries to set up the muscle buster. Bentley sneaks out of that, but then gets caught in the coquina clutch, tap out. So a good tune-up match for Joe. Win a star in 3/4. Not bad at all. Then we get our feature match for TNA Impact, which is Rhino versus Abyss. This is a rematch of Final Resolution. Really nice slugfest to start. Rhino hits a good belly-to-belly suplex. He goes for the gore, but Abyss regroups as we head to break. When we come back from break, Rhino charges into a big boot from Abyss. Dave Ebner is now at the entranceway, so he's moved down from his seat, so great. Don West says it gets weirder and weirder every week. Abyss works over Rhino for a bit. James Mitchell gives him the doomsday sign. Rhino's able to fight back with a spine buster. Rhino charges in, but Abyss moves out of the way, and Rhino goes flying to the floor. This is where the match kind of falters a bit for me. I really like the match up to this point, where it was a nice slugfest, engaging and entertaining. When it goes to the floor, it becomes much more of a garbage brawl, where Abyss grabs a chair, delivers a shot to the back. West is just losing his shit over these chair shots, by the way. Rhino then grabs a trash can as they fight more into the entranceway. Rhino gives a chair shot to Abyss. Rhino calls for the gore and ends up goring him through the set. We can see the backstage area where Shane does his interviews. That did look pretty cool. We got some big TNA chants. Shane Douglas is in his TNA mustard yellow shirt and his slacks and had flip-flops on, because you usually don't see his feet when he does interviews. So that made me chuckle. Match gets thrown out at that. So the final spot was good. Like I said, the match until it went on the floor was actually shockingly good. Like I was judging on the Justin Wrestling Warzone scale, it was kind of close to hidden gem territory. Once it went outside, it just became more of your generic garbage brawl, which was disappointing. I think it was probably also more disappointing that portion of the match after seeing the way Benoit and Orton were able to utilize the weapons they did in the manner they did previously, and that just felt a lot more organic than here. This just kind of felt like, let me grab a weapon, we'll walk to the back, and then we're setting up this big spot at the end. So kind of an up and down match, but I thought it was better than their pay-per-view outing, so I went 2.75. And not bad. I mean, Abyss and Rhino certainly haven't been bothersome in this promotion overall. Then the main event spot for the entire show is a Sting interview. Sting gets a great reaction coming out. He goes, "Woo, Stinger in the house." Sting strolls down memory lane talking about the thoughts of his career. He thought it was done. He thought his last match at Panama City with Ric Flair in March 2001 was it. But then he got a call from TNA. He says that he saw the new talent, and there's a handful of people in the back that are going to be future world champs. He mentions Styles, and he mentions Samoa Joe, so, you know, not bad by Sting being the predictor there. He says once he saw this young talent, TNA was his brand. Sting says if it wasn't given an offer for TNA, that would have been it. He thanks Dixie Carter and TNA management. He thanks the fans. But then it's time to say goodbye. The Please Don't Go chant start up. One guy holds up a 2006, the year of the Scorpion sign, right after Sting just said he was leaving and this was goodbye. Sting drops the bat in the ring and leaves, and is joined at the entranceway by AJ Styles, Christian, and a bunch of other TNA talent to send him off. So, a really weird interview, really weird segment. And this is kind of one of those TNA problems that comes about when you watch the promotion as a whole is, I mean, yeah, certainly Sting probably has the most name, household name cachet of anyone within the promotion, but him holding the promotion hostage and saying, hey, you know, it was great to wrestle one time, thank you for the opportunity, you know, it makes TNA sound like they begged him for the opportunity. He did come. He wrestled the match at the pay-per-view. He had a good time. But, you know, he's not wanting to stick around. He's not wanting to get involved with feuds. So now, you know, he's bolting. And it's just a weird concept. It doesn't fit. It doesn't make the promotion look great. And ancillarily, it also doesn't look like you know, that the other talent looks great. As this guy comes in, he has the main event segment, the main event spotlight, and now he's just bolting. So a really weird interview to end things here. Overall, as a match, I mean, as a show, Impact, I thought, was fine. It set up a lot for the pay-per-view, but certainly the interview segment with Sting to end things left a bad taste in my mouth for the show overall, so I'd probably, rating-wise, probably 5 out of 10. I think I'd just go average for this episode of Impact. I mean, we didn't get a good match. We got some decent ones, but it was mostly just set up for the pay-per-view. And like I said, the final interview with Sting was just weird. I honestly don't know when he comes back. I know it's a while, but I don't know. So, I mean, I'm left in the dark. You know, I'm falling to stuff a lot for the first time, so it actually works that I can't really look back in retrospect and see, knew where this was going, because I don't know and don't know when his return is. So that is our reviews for this edition of Fighting Spirit of 06. Please listen to all the other great podcasts on the North South Podcast Connection feed. Monday's Aaron George Day. Tuesday's is the mid-2000s with either TNA Never Dies or the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast. Wednesday's my day, either this show, Fighting Spirit of 06, or Carolina Dreaming, looking at Jim Crockett Promotions. And we're starting to get into some WCW stuff pretty soon. We'll go through up 1994, mostly TV matches for the PTBN Greatest WCW Match of All Time project. Thursdays is either me and Justin with the Wrestling War Zone. We're in the final hype for Good Friends, Better Enemies. So some exciting episodes coming up as we lead into that pay-per-view. And a match I'm really looking forward to. Actually, I hadn't rewatched that one yet, but looking forward to watching to see if Michaels versus Diesel holds up all buy-in. And then as Thursdays are also Extreme Three-Way Dance with Jeannie, D'Amato, and Justin going through 1995 right now, ECW. Some great stuff. Their latest show was on Hostile City Showdown, which is a great ECW show. And finally, Saturdays is either No Holds Barred or Justin, the Overlord himself, is starting to grace his presence with some solo shows digging into the treasure trove. So looking at kind of random matches there. So 5 days a week, you should be getting thank you very much for the support. Please like and share us. If you can be so kind to give us a rating on iTunes, that really helps out. It really does with the algorithms, so can get our name out there more. And till next time, this is Chad Campbell signing off.